Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
We both are on the same track as far as we know something happened 2 or 3 days before she reported him missing that she did that made him sick. Whether it was her beating him and causing an injury or him peeing in the bed and her making him clean up the mattress and stuff with too much ammonia. We know one of those cases. Between us, we know that is what caused him to be sick. With that said, we really believe sometime during that night, whether it was an accident, whether she lost her temper, whether he got so sick that, you know, the injury took him, whatever, he passed away that night in his bed. What happened after that, we don't know. We may never know, because the only person who knows is her.
Hello, and welcome to episode 35 of The Vanished. This is part 2 of Paul Baker's story. If you have not listened to part 1 yet, go back and listen to that first. In this second part of the story, Nina and I discussed how she and her father were recently able to reconnect and do exactly what Susan Baker had wanted to prevent them from doing for all of those years, compare stories.
My father actually sent me a letter about 2 years ago in the mail here where I live. And requested for me to talk to him, apologized. It seemed to be a very sincere letter, but I was not ready to contact him yet. I've got 3 kids myself. I was not ready for him to come into my life with me having 3 kids. I was not ready to open that bridge. That was 2 years ago, last 6-7 months. He contacted me on Facebook as friend requests, so I went on Facebook, and I really looked, and I looked, and I looked, because I was so scared. They were still married. Then I looked, and I saw where he had gotten remarried, and I saw his new wife is named Deborah something. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, did Susan get out early? Did they get remarried? You know, everything you could go think, I thought this was her with a different name. I thought, you know, this is her playing a trick on me. You name it, I thought it. And it wasn't until I saw a picture of his wife and saw, you know, okay, she's got kids and adult kids and da-da-da. When I finally responded, I was like, is this you, Dad? And he responded fairly quickly, and we've been talking since. Initially, it was very strained. Initially, it was like just talking to someone you would met on the side of the road. Initially, I explained to him, I don't know, you know, how I'm going to, you know, let my kids perceive him as. And he was okay with that. I've talked to his wife. I met his wife. We've actually met up a couple months ago for the first time. We went to go see his dad. We met up for the first time since I was 18. And we talked to the point where I think I drove my husband insane. But we still hadn't really talked much about Paul up to that point. It wasn't until after we had met face-to-face where we really started getting more into depth about what happened over the last 2 or 3 days. He was, you know, he was alive. As we've talked about it, we both have realized neither I nor him has saw him since the night before. So she was the last person to see him. I mean, all the way from the night before. My father did hear him coughing during the night, and he went in to check on him, and she said no, and she went in. Obviously, you know, he stayed in bed. Then that morning, he went to go check on it, and once again, she stopped him. He said he saw some blankets rolled up, and up until me and him recently talked, he never knew I had not seen him that morning. He had thought I'd seen him that day. He thought I had seen him either when I got off the bus, or he thought I'd seen him, you know, that morning. Until recently, when me and him have actually sat down and talked about that day, he did not realize I had not seen him that day. And at that point, he says he did not actually see him. He saw blankets on the bed, but not him. Since then, my father has told me that, you know, he doesn't know if it was a dream. He doesn't know if it was real. He said he didn't mention it at the time of the investigation because he didn't think it was relative because, you know, because he was so sure that Paul was there that morning. But he says sometime during the night he had a dream or something where he had heard a car door or car or trunk or something shut, and he heard people talking. He says, but he assumed it was just a dream. Because right after that, he said, you know, he doesn't remember anything else after that.
Doesn't that make you wonder if someone else possibly could have been involved?
We both are on the same track as far as we know something happened 2 or 3 days before she reported him missing that she did that made him sick. Whether it was her beating him and causing an injury, or him peeing in the bed and her making him clean up the mattress and stuff with too much ammonia.
I never thought about the ammonia possibility until Nina mentioned it. Bedwetting is considered to be normal in children under 5 years old. I know from my own personal experience with my children that I would not be shocked by a 3-year-old wetting the bed. The idea of making a 3-year-old clean up with ammonia after they had wet the bed is so upsetting. It is common sense to keep chemicals away from young children, not force them to use them to clean up after a normal bedwetting incident.
We know one of those cases. Between us, we know that is what caused him to be sick. With that said, we really believe sometime during that night, whether it was an accident, whether she lost her temper, whether he got so sick that, you know, the injury took him, whatever, he passed away that night in his bed. What happened after that, we don't know. We may never know, because the only person who knows is her. Throughout the investigations, there's been skepticism, like once her sister said she had told her what happened, but then took it back, and now her sister's no longer here. So we'll never know. There was a time where, you know, there was a cellmate who stated that Susan had told her that my dad had killed him and da-da-da-da. But then the cellmate retracted that also. So every time someone has came up to say something, it's always been retracted. To us and to me, I really feel like she has maybe told someone. Or maybe told someone but used different way of telling it. As far as saying, you know, it was my father, or, oh, I know this person, this happened, or... But we'll never know, because she's the only one who knows.
Nina sent me some case documents that she had, and one was about the cellmate informant. It was actually two women who came forward. One was a cellmate, and one was a trustee at the prison. I'll give you a summary of that document. The cellmate said that Susan told her that she and James had gotten into a fight, so she left to go to a girlfriend's house. When she returned home, James had beaten Paul unconscious and had also beaten Nina. They supposedly buried Paul in a friend's yard who lived nearby. They told the friend that they needed to bury a dead dog. She also noted that Paul was alive when he was buried. Susan stated that Nina was there when he was buried, but was threatened with bodily harm if she ever said anything. She said that James killed Paul because he hated him and thought that he wasn't really his father, and that he had been tricked into taking custody of the children. I felt physically ill when I read that. I do not think that this story is 100% true, and I personally don't believe that James killed Paul, but you know how usually lies contain a piece of the truth? It makes me worry that some of this story may be part of the truth, and I don't want to think about Paul being buried alive, or anyone for that matter. The prison trustee said that Susan told her that James had assaulted Paul because he hated him, but that he had been kidnapped by his biological mother.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
From the beginning of that day, because, like I said, we've talked a lot. So, according to my father, and looking at everything, he went to work that morning. I don't know the exact times, because I'd have to go look, but my father says he feels like he had gotten that phone call at his job earlier that morning and had left a message saying, this is your wife or ex-wife, I've got Paul, don't worry. There was just a message left for him. So, no number, no name, no nothing. A random message. So, when he came back into the office about 11-ish or so, at that time he had called Susan and say, what's going on? And that's when everything came to light. You know, my father was like, well, if it was that early in the morning, why was he already taking a nap? If it was that early in the morning, she would have still had him with her, in her sights. There's just a lot of things. Me getting off the bus, why wasn't he at the fence waiting for me to? He was 3 years old. What do young 2-3-year-olds do? Bus is coming. Run to the fence. Run to the front yard. And then the time frame of how late he slept. He was 2-3. They do not sleep late. At all. Not if you put them in bed. And trust me, she made us go to bed. They don't sleep late. So he should have been up early than what she's stating. A lot of holes, a lot of questions, a lot of why would that happen? Why would that happen? You know, obviously the technology back in 1980s was not the technology that we have today. So it would have been a lot harder to trace where that phone call came from. You know, everything's got electronic timestamps now, you know, with your phones, with this, with that, you know, even with the buses, as far as exactly the times that things had occurred. I really feel like if it had happened this day and time, she would not have gotten away with it. There was blood in the hallway. There was blood on his bed, but everything we've heard is there wasn't enough to prosecute for a dead body.
Nina sent me a message after our interview. After she spoke with me, she called her dad and they were working on piecing things together some more. He told her the last time that he remembered hearing Paul was around 2 a.m. when he heard him cough. At that time, Susan went to check on him and didn't immediately come back. She later told him that she had fallen asleep. She also said that Susan told the police that Paul was in his room playing before he took the nap at 11 a.m., which is a different story from what she told Nina when Nina got off the bus. She told her that he was playing out in the yard. I asked Nina if she could explain to me what kind of impact both the abuse and Paul's disappearance had on her life.
When it comes to my kids, I'm very paranoid. My kids have never had a babysitter a day in their life. If they did stay with someone, it was an aunt that I knew I would be able to trace back somehow, or my mom would keep them. I've actually drove 45 minutes before every day for a babysitter because I would not just leave them with anyone. I've raised my kids to be very aware. I've raised my kids to question. If someone tells you to do something, you need to ask why. If they can't tell you a reasonable reason why, then you need to come tell me. I've raised my kids to be more aware of things like that, to be more aware of their friends. I've made them, like, you know, if someone, like, my kids were like, such as me, Nesco. I'm like, well, how do you know something at home's not happening to him? So I've made my kids very aware of the possibility. If it's not happening to them, it could be happening to somebody else. If they see a kid, because I was a very lonely kid. Even after I went to live with my grandmother, I was a kid who got in trouble at school because I'd be the kid climbing the counters at school. I was emotionally, and I just was not, I'd gone through so much. I was the kid that, you know, you could tell something's not right. And that's why I tell my kids, if you see, be nice to them, because you don't know. So I've taught my kids to be more tolerant of others. I feel like I've became more than a statistic. Most kids have gone through what I've gone through, end up not going to school, dropping out, drugs, alcohol, you name it. Did I almost go down that route? Yes. What saved me from going down that route is my grandmother. She was so strict on me. Even though, you know, as you saw, she said some things that kind of weren't quite right. But it was her who got me to really focus on school, even though I did drop out of high school. But when I dropped out, I was like, nope, I'm going back to school as soon as I turned 18. Went back to school. GED, got my nursing license and all. Does him going missing bother me? Yes. Can I change that? No. Am I still looking for somebody on the side of the road? That's him? No. Because there was no way, if I came out of there the way I was, and he was 3, and as her temper was getting worse, there was no way he came out of the house.
Nina believes that there's some similarities between Paul's disappearance and Shannon's abduction.
The only thing, you know, the Shannon Derrick thing in his case was very similar. She was initially our babysitter. She was initially, even though she's related to him somehow, marriage-wise, that baby's babysitter. The front door being left unlocked. The front door in our house was being unlocked. the fact that it happened, theirs happened early morning. With everything that shows and with what I'm telling you, ours happened early morning. It did not happen that day. The way she was very calm and collective, what I'm hearing from my dad, was how calm and collective she was the day Paul went missing.
When Paul disappeared, Susan's manipulation gave her time. When Shannon disappeared, the police were already onto her because they knew her history. This may be the only reason that baby Shannon is alive today.
As if, you know, everything's fine. Initially, this is what happened. And this is how we know there's foul play. So that phone call that initiated, "This is your wife, I have Paul, don't worry." So when that came through, for the first few days, week, the total investigation was focused on my mom. Thinking she had Paul. Thinking she had somehow figured a way to come from New York to South Carolina and take Paul. Because she was actually like on a plane coming from New York to North Carolina, my grandma's, with my brother that had been born a few months before all of this. So they were searching my grandmother's house. They were questioning my mother in North Carolina for several days. Meanwhile, my mom's sitting there going, "Where's my kid?" While they're looking at her going, "What did you do with him?" It wasn't until they finally concluded, and I don't think it wasn't until they finally got me out of the house and saw me, or really was able to see what was going on, when they started turning their eyesight towards her. So that gave time. They gave a lot of time. That gave her time to get herself together. The Shannon Derek thing, when it initially occurred, they were looking for a random kidnapper somewhere else. They weren't looking for anything immediately, which also gave her time, but not enough time because of her history. It makes me, you know, because in her mind, she was saving the baby. Well, in your mind, were you saving me, my brother? Because that's not what happened.
I asked Nina about the possibility of confronting Susan in the future.
I've been in the same room with her, but I've never been able to sit in a room with her with glass between us, obviously, because I'd be scared to actually sit down and ask her straightforward. "I know this happened. I know this happened. Now, where is he?" I've never been able to do that. I've never had a chance. Do I want that? Yes. Do I need that to turn my life upside down? No. You know, my life is pretty stable, and I know that would kind of throw me into a turmoil. It would really mess with me mentally, too. Do I feel like she would tell me? No. Do I think it would bring up enough rage in her for her to show her true self? Yes. That's what I say, glass between us. I couldn't sit there, you know, without her being. I'd have to know I was 100% protected to do that. Has my father ever done that? I don't think so. It hasn't been until the last 6 months that we've talked. I've told him my point of the view. And I've told him what I knew of that day. And I've told him, for example, it wasn't until these last 6 months. He said he had read the police reports where I'd been abused. He had read the police reports of the scars, but he never believed it. He said he thought that they were making it worse than what it really was. So it wasn't until the last 6 months where we've been talking that I was able to tell him this is what happened. Because for a very long time, like I said, until she's been away from him, he never knew what really happened in that house. And I think that's why she's always tried somehow to keep us from really talking, comparing stories, him finding out what really happened when he wasn't at home, things like that. And because of our conversation in 6 months, a lot of what I've told him has filled in some holes. Some what he's told me has filled in some holes where it's like, okay, wow, we know this occurred. We know beyond a doubt. I'm expecting her to confess. I'm expecting, and at this point, I doubt if Bones will ever come up.
Nina told me about another strange phone call that was related to Paul's disappearance.
So, 2 weeks, this nothing came about on this, but about 1 to 2 weeks after Paul went missing, there was an anonymous phone call to a landfill in, right there where they lived, saying, the baby's in the landfill, the baby's in the landfill. I'll be there such and such day and time. And that was it. Detectives went in, looked into it accordingly. Nothing ever came about it. The lady never showed up. This was within 1 to 2 weeks after Paul went missing. Around that time also, there was anonymous things of something about him being in Florida. Well, guess what? They're from Florida. So it's really, it makes me wonder how much did she manipulate this? How much manipulation there was to keep getting them, because it worked for a good week. And if I had not been abused, if I had not seen her reaction to when he peed in the bed, if she hadn't locked me in the closet, if she hadn't did that with the bathtub, maybe I would have believed someone kidnapped him. But there is no way. Like my mother said, if she had ever had someone kidnap him, why, she would have took me too. Because I was in pretty bad shape. I had hair missing from my scalp where she used to pull my hair. And for the longest time afterwards, I've even got a picture somewhere. I had a white streak in my hair where it grew back white. I guess as over time, you know, when I was a kid, it finally grew out and was actually normal color. So that's what I'm saying. If they took Paul, why didn't they take me? Why would she take medications and knock her out so early in the morning when you've got a small kid in the house? And if that's the case, if you were knocked out that much that someone could sneak in your house, get a kid out of your house, how did you wake up when the phone rang? It's just a lot of holes. But, I don't know. I don't know if I ever know the answer. If I could make a deal and say, I don't want you prosecuted, I don't want this, just tell us. Just tell us and I would be happy. Tell us, give us a grave, give us something that we can go visit. Give us something. Let us really mourn. Let us grieve.
I wondered if law enforcement had made any recent efforts to try to get Susan to talk about what happened to Paul.
I've asked the detective about that with what's recently came up, but he's like, it may be time for us to visit her again. But I'm pretty sure it'll just be another dead end again.
I've had many listeners reach out to me after listening to part one. They wondered how this level of abuse went unnoticed. Why didn't anyone step in? Nina and I did discuss regrets.
There's a lot of regrets. On my side, I know there's regrets on my father's side. Why didn't he see it? Why didn't he suspect her more? A lot of regrets. That said, I will say this. I've recently, found out that Susan was victim of child abuse herself. Which, a lot of times when that happens, victims either become abusers themselves, not making excuses for her, or become people who cannot discipline their kids due to fear of abusing. I'm not making excuses for her. However, when I was a brand new parent and my daughter was two, like I said, I never knew what was, it took me a while for me to figure out what was abuse, what's not abuse, what's appropriate way to, and I still don't have that all together yet. And I felt like, I got really upset with my daughter. She was 2 years old. And at that point, I realized that I needed to back off because I could easily go down that road. And can I say, do I discipline my kids enough sometimes? No. But I'd rather do that than go the opposite way. Because I have a hard time distinguishing between the two. I'm getting better now that my kids are almost teenagers. I'm getting better. I've had, 14, 15 years of learning, of experience. So I'm getting better at that, of knowing what's the difference. And because of that, I don't whip my kids. Punishment is fussing at them pretty much. Punishment is taking away something. Punishment is very mild in my house. My kids' friends say, oh, I'm so nice. Because they're like, oh, my mom would have done this, or my mom. But they don't realize why I don't discipline like a typical parent would. I tried the standing in the corner with my kids. They wouldn't stay in the corner, so I let it go. And because I didn't know where that line was when they were little, I let it go. Because, how do I say it? If my daughter was stayed in the corner, I would have done it all day long, but she wouldn't. And I took her back to the corner several times, but I noticed I tried to get her in the corner, she would not stay. It would have been very easy for me to cross that line. I did go to the room and shut the door. Lock the door, but I did those things. That way it was less of me having to restrain her or actually put my hands on her, because I didn't. And like I said, I'm not trying to make, but a lot of times when someone has been abused, you either become the abuser or you become the non-discipline. And my husband's the one who does most of the discipline in my house. It's affected me, how I've raised my kids. Quite a bit. quite a bit. My daughter has never slept over at anyone's house, ever. And she's almost 15. And she will never sleep at anyone's house, as long as I have anything to do with it. Because I can't trust somebody. You know, I can't trust someone to have her out of my sight with someone that I cannot physically be able to find or hunt down. Does that make sense? She stayed the night with my mom, but I can find my mom. I know how to find her. My daughter's friend's mom, if something was to happen, how would I really be able to find her? My daughter recently had a friend that kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and her parents like, why not? Because they were so laid back. And I finally had to pull her parents to the side once, because it was really like, it was starting to become a struggle between me and my daughter. Because my daughter was like, I'm telling you, my mom's going to say no. And the girl would be like, no, go ask her. And it just got too much of a triangle struggle. So finally, I pulled the parents away and was like, look, this is why we don't do sleepovers. And I told them. And then once I explained that, they stopped. So it's hard when you're living in a society where not everyone has experienced a kid go missing or something wrong going happen. Because then sometimes I have to step out of my box and explain myself why. I don't know, it's day by day, you know. My husband knows he tries not to get me thinking or talking about it too much because he doesn't like seeing me get upset. Even when I told him, I was like, yeah, I'm doing this thing. He's like, why? He goes, what are you going to get out of it? And he's like, what do you want? And really, I couldn't tell him what I want. And he said that primarily because he saw the day I got the transcript of the investigation. And I mean, it's a good stack. I sat and I read it and read it and read it and read it and read it. And by the time he came home, I was so in pieces that I just bawled and he held me. He's like, you can't do this. He goes, we need you too much. You've got to pull yourself together. He goes, I can't let you be like this. So anytime things come up, he tries to really be like, why are you doing this? We need you. These kids need you. I need you. Because during that Shannon Derrick and all that, he really saw me almost fall down a very slippery slope. So he was very worried when me and my dad started talking. But now that he's met my dad himself, he's kind of okay with it. I need that stability because if I not, and if I really concentrate on all the details, I could easily fall into a deep hole. It was like, I was like, my mom, she wasn't there. I was there.
To this day, Nina still wonders what memories may be locked inside her mind that may be just too painful to face.
Somewhere during the investigation, I told them that my mommy, which they quoted was Susan, told me not to talk to them. I have no recollection of anything that occurred after my father came up that day. So it makes me wonder, what did she do? What did she say to me to make me that fearful? I know this is primarily about Paul, but I know you touch on abuse a little bit too. But all before all of this occurred, I'd already experienced abuse in other ways. Everything was great when my mom and my dad were still together. After they separated, like I told you before, my mom wasn't the best parent. So while I was with my mom, I didn't experience actually physical abuse, but sexual abuse. But not knowing it at that time. Because I was even younger than 5 and 6 at that time. I didn't know. And that's why I said when my father pulled out that day, we were at the mother of the guy who it occurred. That's why when my father pulled up, I was so happy. And that's why I said I when I was in that courthouse, I knew what was on this side. That's why I went to that side. As a kid, you're stuck. You're stuck. You're stuck and there's nowhere you can go. Either way, you can't go right, you can't go left. I was stuck. And it wasn't until the police officer who came and took me out of the house that night and got me into the foster home, that was the first time I really experienced what it was supposed to be like, what a mother, a father was supposed to be like, which was weird. And then I went and lived with my grandmother. My grandmother sat in her old strict ways. And she was strict. She was not abusive, but she was very strict because she's the one who kind of was able to get enough discipline in me enough to keep me going the right way. It's been a rough life. And, you know, I guess it's better, but, you know, I don't know. My kids know about it. My daughter, who's 14, 15, knows about it. My sons know about it. Every once in a while, if they see me crying or see something going on, like we were really trying to keep this current investigation away from my kids, but finally they put it together and they asked me. They go, Mom, is it about Paul? So initially I told my daughter first because she's older, and then eventually my boys found out too. But my daughter at one point had this famous idea. What if her and her best friend could solve the case and no one else could? So it hasn't affected just me. It's affected my kids. Because they're wondering, well, where is he? Is he dead? Is he alive? Do I have an uncle? Do I not have an uncle? What? They don't know how to wrap their brains around it either. And they're too young. Generation by generation. I know there's going to be a trickle effect. You know, there's a trickle effect down to my daughter. You know, I know the way I parent her is going to trickle down to her kids. She thinks I'm horrible. but, you know, that's okay. And I don't know how it's going to affect my kids in the future. I don't. And I try not to let them see me upset or crying or anything like that. The first time they really got a good glimpse of me falling apart was when the Shannon Derrick thing. They were pretty much in bed by that time. It was just me and my husband, so they didn't see me that night. But it was the next day and the next day and the next day that they started seeing me fall apart. And then I got myself back together again. And then when I read the detective stuff, I fell apart again. And that was, I think that was the worst of everything. Because I remember sitting in the kitchen crying and telling my husband, I know what happened. I know what happened. I know what happened. And that's when my kids really saw me fall apart. And I really tried to keep them from seeing me that way. You know, when they're seeing me that upset over my brother, who we don't 100% know what happened, you know, that even confuses them even more. You know, as kids, you got that certainty that my mom's going to be there. My father's going to be there. My brother's going to always be there. You don't think about someone going missing. But my kids have actually had to incidents where they've had to, I mean, it hits them like, oh, your brother went missing. You know, could that happen? You know.
Nina has a copy of all the police records that have been released up until this point.
As you heard earlier, she was deeply affected by the information that was in those records. She has not shared them with everyone in her family, though.
I haven't made copies of it and given it to him yet to look, so he has not looked at it yet. And I have a feeling once he does, things are going to hit home with him like it hit home with me. Because me being my age and being at my age then, I was able to go, oh, that's a lie. That's a lie. Wait a minute, that's not true. And my father's going to be able to do the same when he reads through it.
I wanted to hear Nina's opinion on how she felt Paul's disappearance was handled by law enforcement.
Sometimes feel like when these detectives have gotten the, for example, the landfill, why didn't they look into that more? Why didn't they question her about it? Why didn't they do more with that? I feel like sometimes when things like that pop up, maybe things could have been followed through a little bit more.
If you have any information about the disappearance of Paul Baker, please call 202-433-9183. The phone number for the National Child Abuse Hotline is 1-800-4-A-CHILD or 1-800-422-4453. That brings us to the end of part two of this story. I have gotten messages from people all around the world who were moved by Nina's story in part one. I would like to again thank her for being brave enough to share her story with all of us. Nina, your story is important. Paul's story is important. I am doing something a bit different at the end of this episode. You all know that I usually play a short clip at the end of each episode, but Nina said some very powerful things that I wanted to leave you with, and I did not want to cut any of them out. So stay tuned for that at the end. I would like to thank everyone for listening. If you would like to contact me, I am on Twitter at TheVanishedPod. I have a Facebook page and a closed group. If you have any trouble finding the group, please send me a message and I will send you a link. The closed group gives us a place to chat without all of your friends and family seeing your comments. If you have a missing loved one and would like to have them featured on the show, please email me at thevanishedpodcast@gmail.com. I have a call-in line for the show. You can call me at any time and leave a message at 814-826-4749. If you like the show, there are several things that you can do to help me keep on making it better. First, subscribe on iTunes or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Give The Vanished a positive review and share the show with your friends. Also, I would love to know a little bit more about you. So please complete a quick survey at wondery.com/survey. I promise it takes less than 3 minutes of your time. Again, that is wondery.com/survey. If you would like to contribute to the show to help me defray some of my production expenses, please visit patreon.com/thevanishedpodcast. There is also a PayPal button on the website. I would like to thank all the listeners who have already done this. I truly appreciate it. I will catch up with everybody next week, and I promise the next episode is not about a child.
Seeing what she did and seeing how things happen, you never know what's going on behind closed doors. And as a kid, being so helpless. And as a kid, you are helpless. You have your 100% trust in these adults to take care of you. But they have the full control of doing anything they want, and there's nothing you can do. You're at their mercy. You're really at the mercy of adults as kids. It's really bothers me when I start thinking about, you know, other, like I told my kids, when you see a kid at home at school yelling and bullying and cussing and acting out, stop and think about what's going on in that home, because they have learned that somewhere. But that said, as us adults, what do we really do? What do we really do? What did the school do? There had to be a signs with me. And what did they do? Who spoke up and said, hey, maybe something's not right here. A lot of times I'll be at Walmart. And this is just me, but like my mind wanders. And you see, yeah, kids act up. Yes, you discipline. Yes, you carry them out screaming under your arm. But when you see the incidents where, and I'm not trying to judge, I'm not. But knowing where I came from, when I see an incident where a kid acts up and the mom's just like completely going off on that kid, playing and screaming and taking them to the bathroom, then they come in and they continue to yell and scream at that kid and tell them, wait till we get home. In the back of my mind, it worries me, because what are they going to do when no one's watching? But how many times do we just stand there and watch? Scared of what someone's going to say, or scared to get into a conflict. I'm guilty of it. You know, or no one, like my grandparents, they knew something was off, but wasn't sure what was off. Just speaking up and saying, hey, you know, let them say something. So, it might save a kid. And my dad was in the Marines. I really feel like if we lived on base, the outcome would have been different. You know, because things would have been reported more frequently if we lived on base, but we didn't live on base. We lived off of base. Because my mother, growing up with them, and my father lived on base, and my mom whipped us. This was when they were still together. Whipped us, like, really bad, like, left marks on me, whipped me over me and some kids tearing up a mattress. But we lived on base, and the woman that was keeping us actually called Family Services that was with the Marines. And there was an investigation with that. That's why I really feel like if we had lived on base, maybe something would have shifted. Somebody. But why wasn't Family Services following them closely? You know, my dad was still in the Marines. You know, he'd already had this incident. You know, they'd already gone through a divorce. You're bringing in someone else. Why weren't they following him and his kids closer? Not saying it's their fault or anything, but there could have been so many ways for them to keep that from happening. Somebody. Too busy working. Too busy going through their day-to-day lives to notice. Even my father said, you know, if it had been me who got missing, he would have suspected her. But because it wasn't me and Paul, he didn't suspect her as much. That should have been a sign there. That should have been a huge sign. You know, wait a minute.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.